This is KUT
Austin.
Stop.
I used to get mad at my school. Teachers had taught me when cool. Holding me down, turning me round, filling me up with your rules. To admit it's getting better.
Hello, and welcome to Higher Ed, KUT's podcast focusing on issues of higher education, lifelong learning, and exercising the brain. I'm Jennifer Staton with KUT 90.5, Austin's NPR station, talking as always with Dr. Ed Berger, president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. Hello, Ed.
Hi, Jennifer. How are you?
Well, I'm doing very well. How are you?
You're in a good mood. I'm actually doing very well, but usually when I'm with you, I'm in good spirits.
Well, good. You actually got an email from a listener. We're going to take up a listener topic in this episode. And by the way, if you do have a topic you want us to try to tackle or fight about, perhaps
exactly
in your episode,
that'd be fun.
Just send me an email, jstayton, S-T-A-Y-T-O-N, jstayton@kut.org, and we'll take it up in a future episode. This topic is really great. I love this one. You got an email from a listener who wanted to know about raising curious and confident kids, focusing on ways to get children participating in science and math and cool things like that, and kind of instilling in them curiosity to question things, but also the confidence to kind of move forward in that and try to maybe find their own way and create things. And so this listener was really interested in hearing about a time when you've promoted that curiosity and confidence in kids, in young learners, and how you go about doing that.
Yes, and it's very complicated, but that the idea of having individuals with an innate sense of curiosity and confidence, I think, is very, very important. Now, confidence does, by the way, just, I don't want to derail our conversation, but does not mean that you are free of doubt, because we talked about doubt and I'm a big fan of it, but confidence in that you can come forward with a potential solution or a potential answer, and then you'll be willing to engage in a process if it turns out that that's not quite right, or if you think about it more deeply, you come up with a different mindset and your point of view is slightly different. But, you know, we've talked about a lot of these things, and they're incorporated in, you know, the five elements that we've spoken about a long time ago. First of all, teaching people to create questions. It's not that it's important to even ask questions, although you will get a response, and so therefore it's stimulation, and you will learn something. But the act, it's an internal act of constantly creating questions. It moves individuals from being passive observers to active, engaged participants in their life's journey. And starting that at a very young age is absolutely essential. So, you know, part of the curriculum needs to be about having the students create questions. That's got to be, so like on a test, it's not enough to ask them to answer these questions, but part of the test should be to ask questions. And that's a very powerful way of developing that practice of constantly questioning everything. So that can really be worked into our curriculum.
Well, and it's funny to me because I think young people have that.
Absolutely.
When 2-, 3-, 4-year-olds, they ask about everything. And what happens the more they ask, don't we adults get irritated and annoyed and we try to get them to stop because we don't want to answer, why is the sky blue and why are dogs furry? Like after
That's
a certain point, we, I think, try to shut down that questioning because we get annoyed.
Well,
but actually, that's something we don't necessarily want to shut down.
Well, of course not. Absolutely not. And that gets into the other aspect of the writer's question, which is about confidence. You know, there are educators out there who are, you know, really well-meaning people who are giving their lives to education, but, and I'm thinking about my own field of mathematics, but who themselves are not particularly confident in mathematics. And instead of either trying to shore up that confidence and or be comfortable in the fact that, you know, I don't have to know all the answers. I'm very comfortable in saying I don't know anything about math. And so ask me any question and I'll think about it with you. But what you'll have instead sometimes is a little person, you know, a student will approach her teacher and say, you know, this is how, you know, it says to do it in the book. But I have this other way. Is it okay for me to do it my way? Well, first of all, you just want to take that student and say, wonderful. I mean, that is such a wonderful attitude, and let's explore that and let's think about it and then see. Maybe it's always okay. Maybe it's equivalent to the way. Maybe it only works in some cases, and that's a wonderful discovery. But sometimes what you'll have is the teacher will say, because they themselves aren't very confident, will say, no, do it the way it's in the book. Now, that's doing the opposite of what this person's asking us about. It's removing all confidence. It's removing all curiosity, because it's saying just memorize the algorithm. And that's why so many people hate math, is because they see math as a bunch of algorithms and steps that we just have to follow blindly. There's no thought, there's no meaning behind it, and that's what we have to do in education. And through curiosity and building confidence, it's basically instilling habits and practices of individuals to say, I'm going to make meaning of this. It's not enough for me to be able to do the last five questions in the back of the chapter. It's going to be meaningful to me. And that's where confidence is built. Wow, I really believe that I understand this better than I did before. I feel great about that. I've triumphed.
So are there some creative ways that you have helped students with that? I mean, it sounds like part of it is just kind of responding to them if they say, I want to try a way that's not in the book, saying yes and supporting that. Are there some other things that you have done or you can think of that you might do to help students in that way?
Well, I mean, of course, there are many, many things. But if you want an overarching one, it would be to make learning joyful and fun. And there are educators that will disagree and say, no, it's supposed to be hard work and, you know, no pain, no gain. And I would argue that if presented right, pain can be fun.
Whoa.
No, because it's you see growth, you see progress. But people think, well, that means that it should be arduous and unpleasant. No, we will not do things that are not pleasant. I mean, how often will you, in a year, 12-month period, how often will you work on your taxes? Seven times a year? Four
no.
times a year? One time a year?
One.
Right. Why? Because it's not pleasant. So if education and learning and intellectual growth is something that's seen as unpleasant, people do not want to do it. And that's the problem we have in this country. So first and foremost, especially with young people, learning should be joyful. It should be fun. And it is. Look at pre-kindergarten, look at kindergarten, look at first grade, even look at like second grade. It's all games, all fun, all inquiry. And then slowly when you get to third grade and beyond, it becomes, here's the rule, don't ask questions, memorize the timetable, you know, memorize this is the year that Columbus came, and just do it. And don't ask questions.
And that's not fun.
And that's not fun. And that's why people don't like formal education. That's why people don't like math. And that's why people are delighted when they have their final course of their life. They can say, I'm done. Well, they shouldn't be done. But we as educators have to instill a mindset where, in fact, I want to know more. So that when the teacher says, okay, now we're moving on, the student should say, no, wait a minute. What about this? Could you imagine having like third or fourth graders saying, no, we demand to know what comes before zero? What
Whoa.
Comes before? Yes. And what does that mean? And how can we think about that? And do the other things that we've talked about with adding and subtracting numbers, does that apply to those things? And can we talk about that? What's between one and two? Are there any numbers between one and two? I mean, so bringing people to that level. Now, through you know, my own teaching and you know live with my own students, I try to do this. I don't believe that educators should be lecturing on or teaching any suite of knowledge that the students right then and there are not wondering themselves. So while teaching math is hard, because math is hard, the much greater challenge is to entice students to ask on their own the very questions that you want to discuss. That's effective teaching. I try to provoke with an interesting circumstance or something, even a magic thing. Look at this, is magic. And they go, well, how did you do that? Well, it turns out it's a mathematical principle, and we're going to now explore it.
So is this week's puzzler what's between one and two?
No.
Oh,
no.
Do you have something else this
No,
week?
But we did a thing on infinity once, if you
we
remember.
We did. And that's
and there are infinitely many numbers between
right.
one and two. And in fact, you can't even list them all. You cannot list all the numbers between one and two. That's
and
how many there are.
There was also a great puzzler in a separate episode about infinity that was
the ping pong ball
yeah,
one. I that remember
was, that. That was a great one. Yes.
No. This one only involves six things.
Okay.
So you can deal with this.
I think I can.
Okay. Now you have three little bags.
Okay.
And each bag contains two marbles.
Okay. Here are my bags. Here are my marbles.
Yes. Okay. Very good. And very nicely done. And I'll just so I can talk about them, I'll call them bag A, bag B, and bag C.
Okay.
So bag A contains two white marbles.
Uh-huh.
I want to see what she does.
I put the W's.
Yep. I would have kept them. Okay. Anyway, a bag B contains two black marbles. Mm-hmm. Let's see if she colors them in or writes in. Nope, she wrote in B.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because I don't know what I might need down the
Very
road.
Very nice. So. And then bag C contains one white marble and one black marble.
Okay.
A contains two white marbles. Bag mm-hmm. B contains two black marbles. And bag C contains one white and mm-hmm. one black marble.
Okay.
Okay. Now, you close your eyes and you randomly mix up the bags.
Okay.
And you just pick one of the bags. Okay?
Okay?
At random. You don't look at it.
Okay.
And then you open the bag up and you remove just one marble.
Okay.
Okay? And you look at the marble. Now you open your eyes and just look at that marble, but nothing else.
Okay.
And you see it's a white marble.
Yes.
So you've randomly picked a bag. You reached inside. You randomly picked out one of the two marbles and you saw a white marble.
Uh-huh.
The challenge for you is to figure out what is the probability, what is the likelihood that the remaining marble from that same bag is also white.
Okay.
That is the puzzler. So you reach it, you pick one of the bags at random, you reach in, mm-hmm. you pick out a marble, you just look at the marble, you see that it's a white marble. The question is, what's the likelihood that the other marble left in that same bag is also white?
Okay.
And that is the challenge.
Okay.
Oh, and she's already, look at you go.
All right.
Okay, we're on the air, so let's go back to the show.
No, now I'm all absorbed
but
in
the puzzle. She's already working on it. Okay.
But, you know, there was another very interesting aspect to this listener's question that I want to make sure we touch on before we finish. And the listener also wanted to know, how did you feel, I think you, Ed, in the role of kind of teacher of younger people, how did you feel as a result of trying to inspire these students, you know, trying to instill some curiosity, some confidence? You know, what was that like for you? What did you learn from that?
There is, first of all, how do I feel? And how, I mean, there's no greater joy than sharing ideas with other human beings. I mean, that's why I am in the world of education. I just love engaging with other people, whether it's live in person or via Skype or via some videos that I've already, you know, filmed. And have them see themselves or the world differently. So there's no greater feeling. But it really is about a consciousness of encouraging students to embrace these habits. And whether it's in the sciences where, you know, a lot of people are afraid of, you know, the science, especially mathematics, or the arts. I mean, you know, they call this, you know, STEAM, right? So the science, technology, engineering, art, and math. At the end of the day, it's a mindset, a joy of discovery, a joy of learning. And as that joy grows, one's confidence grows with that journey. And then you want more. It really is a very positive yet addictive mindset. You just want to continue to grow. And so to me, especially, you know, on these videos that I did, which, you know, the youngest videos that I've shot were for kindergarten students.
Oh, I didn't realize they were that young.
Absolutely. And then they go up through, you know, through college. Even how I engaged with the viewer changes, you know, very fun, very silly. And the greatest thing for me is when I then get invited to visit some of these schools, especially the elementary schools where they're using the videos. And these kids are so sweet because they've kind of embraced the humor and the ethos of what I'm trying to get across. And then when I ask them these math questions, they are enthusiastic and want to answer them. And it's because they have this curiosity and it's because they're building this confidence that will allow them to flourish in their adult lives. But that is something that should not end at the end of one's primary studies. It should go on into their secondary studies, and it should persist throughout their undergraduate and graduate work, and should persist in their lives. Everyone needs to feel the high, if you will, of making meaning, having deep understanding, and then continuing that curiosity and always asking questions and not being closed-minded. And even while they're building the confidence, have the confidence to even question their own beliefs.
Thank you, Ed, for helping us keep our brains sharp. Dr. Ed Berger is president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. You can find out more at southwestern.edu. And you can keep your brain busy by keeping up with the news and other episodes of Higher Ed at KUT.org. You can also find us on iTunes. I'm Jennifer Staton with KUT News.